This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
Hi there, folks. I'm Tom Perry, an Agile consultant, and like to introduce you to the world of impediments.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Tom Perry, and we're going to talk about those dastardly little impediments. Do you have interest in this topic called performance management? Sounds very serious.
It does. Sounds very dry, very boring. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a complete failure, but it has the promise. The idea here is, and this is getting at basically, you might call it agile management, and maybe it's my interest in agile management and that domain that got me into this, but what do you do? You know, I think the conventional wisdom is, agile approach is performance management or reviews and bonuses and all of those sort of managerial HR sorts of things. What do you do to encourage that or to make, what are functionally, how can you do that with an agile team? And I think a lot of people are like, let's get rid of the managers, let's do 360 reviews, so we're all reviewing each other, and let's have bonuses be the kind of thing that are no longer individually based, but team based, and sort of, you know, we'll all join communism and we'll chant the Communist Manifesto, and off we march together, brothers in arms. And that's been kind of the agile answer for quite some time. It, you know, and some variation on that theme. And I'm cartooning it quite a bit, but I think you see where I'm going with it. And the fact is that we've ignored managers. We've ignored the role of managers and how we can help them. And one of the biggest headaches for a manager is how to manage employee performance. And so, and whether we take a team-based approach where the team is providing a lot of feedback, there's still a manager in that equation, very likely. We need to give managers guidance on either how to enable that within the team so that the team can take on more of that role, perhaps, or we need to, in many cases, that's going to be down the road a ways. That's fantasy land for 98% of corporate America, which is operating in a very top-down, very hierarchical, very, you know, and we are not helping them at all. And so what we need to do is look at what sorts of incremental improvements or changes we can make at the manager's level to not only to help the manager be more effective and keep the team as agile as possible or enable them to be as agile as possible along the way. And so they still need performance management. They still need to do reviews. What advice do we have to give you about doing reviews that is going to lead you towards a more agile solution? And that's where you look at people like David Marquet, for example. David Marquet has some fascinating ideas about how leaders and managers work with people and the detailed examples of language they can use that creates sort of the environment that allows people to have healthy conversations between subordinates and managers. And so that's, I think that's a fascinating area. I think it's an area we've ignored for a long time. And so I think there's an opportunity there to introduce something called agile performance management, which is a way of introducing these ideas of changing our approach as managers, which ultimately are going to lead to, hopefully, solutions for our teams and each other.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. I want to think about the opening point was something about that, you know, Agile is trying to get rid of the managers. And I wanted to talk about that bias a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be fair to call it that. And I think it's been a bit of a rebellion. I think that managers have been a source of quite a bit of pain and frustration for, you know, originally for software developers. And I think when you're trying to create teams, self-organizing teams is especially, that is almost, well, I mean, the very definition says there's not a manager in a self-organizing team, right? So you're almost kicking them out right off the bat. And that would be lovely, except you're really not kicking them out. They're still there, right?
Well, okay, so we can go down that path. Yeah. Like, well, why are they still there? And did we do something wrong?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, and one could argue that maybe they shouldn't be, or maybe they, you know, and in some organizations, God knows, they have way too many of them.
Right.
So there's definitely an argument to be made that in some cases some organizations are overmanaged, if you will. And so, you know, there probably should be less of them. But still, there's always going to be someone who's a manager. Mm-hmm. And in fact, managers are kind of the glue. And if you start to look at scaling and things, they play this important role in the system, which is largely ignored because we're so team focused. Mm-hmm. We're so focused on the self-organizing, self-managing team that we have just lost sight of what possible value we could get from these other people, this other population. And let's assume we also have to bring to the table the idea that it's possible for that population to be functioning in a way that is supportive and useful and constructive.
Yeah.
If we can't grant that, then we really can't even get started with this.
Yeah.
If we assume that, then the question is, what do we do to help them understand what their role is and how they can enable or create a healthier system? And they're the ones who, especially when you get into scaling, especially mm-hmm. when you get into looking at value streams, mm-hmm. they're the ones who are going to make this stuff work. That's where they need to if it's functional. And it's also where everything falls apart when you're scaling. Is usually at that frozen middle management layer.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. That, I mean, sort of a recap, there's different companies, different levels of manager to people ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the same thing that you have, is that some companies definitely have too many, and some mm-hmm. companies, I don't know if I've seen a company where they don't have enough, and I don't know if I could recognize that. I'm not sure. Maybe I could, but I haven't thought about that much.
Yeah.
It's always when there's like, I have to answer the same question 8 times in a meeting with 8 people who have the same concern. That's where I think, wow, there's a lot of managers here.
Yeah.
But then I do validate exactly what you said about when you start scaling Agile and you start thinking about who's going to manage the business side of the Agile, who's going to check for, this is going to head in your direction, the performance of my product. And how money's being allocated to my product versus other products, you know, if you will, competing for resources. Those are things that I don't know if that would work with a team. I just don't know. Maybe it could, but right now I think, well, I personally would rather have somebody else go do that because mm-hmm. that's a little less interesting. Mm-hmm. It's important, but it's a little less interesting than other challenges.
Yeah, well, and I just think, one of the things that we're still awfully development centric in our approach. And for any given business, development is like this. It's this tiny little slice. And the rest of the business teams don't really have much awareness or even engagement with. And so that's what product managers and product owners, we assume, are doing. But also your typical manager is also playing a role in. And the more I see it, the more I realize how much further we have to go.
The more you see it, more you see what?
The more I understand what's involved in developing products, the whole life cycle, looking at the whole picture. I mean, I'm as guilty as the next guy of just focusing on writing the code and shipping the code.
Right.
But the upstream processes of product discovery and customer discovery and all of that are huge, yeah. You know, are enormous. And the sales and the marketing, all of that. There's an enormous body of work that has to happen up front. And then, of course, once it's on the shelves or once it's out on a production server, then there's an enormous body of work required to support, maintain, and continue to market that product. My experience, in many ways, in my early days was just we got stories, we converted those stories into shippable code, and that was it. That was it. Game over. That was as far as we got. And increasingly, you know, I'm looking at the larger picture and thinking, wow, there's a really cool world out there.
And Tom, as we spoke about earlier in this series, you and I both need managers because we need help marketing our books. We don't spend enough time on that. So
yes, absolutely. And that, you know, the more I've been building some content around product management, and I'm looking at delivery models and pricing models and things like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish I had known this 10 years ago. There's some really, really amazing ideas out there.
So maybe let's try to define performance management. Is it what my takeaway right now, and I don't know if this is what you meant, is that it's mm-hmm. about assessing people for better, I'm going to say raises, but there's another word for it that's a little more PC. But
I think it's wrestling with, and I'm still coming to terms with it, to be honest with you, but I think it's the, what do you do when people are not performing well? Okay. How do you handle that?
Oh yeah.
And there are lots of different ways we can do that. We can have management involved. We can have them not involved. But we need something, because leaving it open and ad hoc for every team to figure out on their own is just a nightmare.
It's a nightmare because, like what would somebody, a listener on the show, maybe they're living that nightmare. How would they recognize they're in that nightmare?
Oh, you have people, if you have a bunch of conflict avoiders on the team and you don't have some sort of model to deal with the problem, then you're going to have somebody who perhaps isn't delivering consistently time and time and time again, slowing the team down, and nobody's confronting the issue because nobody wants to have the conflict, to deal with the conflict. And that happens over and over again. I'm guilty of that. I'm a conflict avoider. I don't want to point at the person and go, good God, could you just deliver? Right? And I wish, you know, nobody wants to have this conversation, but if somebody doesn't, then it just goes on and yeah. on and on and on and on. You're just living with it. Maybe I'm going back to the impediments conversation, but
yeah,
but you know, you know, it's so difficult, and it's not any easier if you're a manager. I've been there. I've had to have those conversations with people who, you know, I want to believe the best. I want to do the right thing, and oh God. It's so painful. And so I think this is an important area. I don't think that we have any real models right now for how we manage this effectively. There's some intriguing ideas here and there. I think this is where we might be able to make a lot of really important improvement for folks if we could give them some sort of method, mechanism, model to deal with these kinds of challenges. And again, this is probably an area where I'm doing it wrong, but I know that I've worked on a lot of teams where we've had challenges like this. And sometimes we did the right thing and had a good conversation and addressed it, and everybody was very supportive. And other times we weren't that good. And that was,
the mic drops.
You're right.
What would solving this look like? Like, what would that world look like?
I think there are a couple of ways to look at that. There are, if you start digging into this, there are actually books on performance management, and they, most of them are miserable reading. But there are some intriguing ideas about how to, like, number one, performance reviews. Just stab me in the eye with a fork, right? I mean, just, you know, there's, and it turns out there are lots of different ways to do performance reviews or not do them at all that that people have explored outside of the Agile community. So outside of Agile, there are lots of different mechanisms for having that conversation. And so, if nothing else, I would like to have a catalog of sort of some of those things to do. What our alternatives are.
Like that retrospective book.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, it's the tough stuff. It's not the easy stuff. The easy stuff it's the tough stuff, like when somebody isn't performing. Mm-hmm. It's the tough stuff, like when it comes down to, I mean, I'm guilty as the next guy when it comes to talking a good game about, well, let's not do individual bonuses because that breaks, you know, that disrupts teamwork. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a challenge there, which is if you have a high performer on the team, they're not going to feel very good, you know. And so what are all our alternatives there? What do we have to offer if we don't? And maybe that's not Agile's job. Maybe that's something else. But is that something that we can help with? At least provide ideas. At least provide alternatives. Yeah, so right now, I'm not aware of anybody who really has a coherent body of knowledge around that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's not an area I'm very versed in. The closest thing I can connect with this or an idea, but it's not fleshed out to the level I think that you're talking about, is what makes great organizations work. Those kinds of books like Culture Code, I found pretty mm-hmm. fascinating about how you create the conditions for high performance. So that I don't know if that's, you consider that part of performance management. It's not about assessing, it's about creating the conditions to have high
performance. Yeah. And it's also, it's a challenging area because as soon as, like, I've been involved in a couple of contract proposals where people have said they want to modernize their performance management system. And what you find when you engage in those contracts, when you start pitching them ideas saying, here, we'll help you improve your performance management, is that number one, they're in the Stone Ages. They're banging rocks together. Very, very conservative, very, very, I mean, there's just, this is Stone Age stuff. And the other thing that you find out is that as soon as you start pitching the hippy-dippy sort of, you know, put on a tie-dye t-shirt and Birkenstocks, we're all going to share common bonuses, that kind of thing, you're fired out of that engagement. like, I mean, just like out of a cannon, you know, it's just, you know, and I'm still smoking from the last time I did that. And it's... So, because they're not, they don't recognize
wrong organizational, you know, that, culture.
So as soon as you start sharing all those ideas, oftentimes you lose the engagement because somebody else walks in with an old school sort of, you know, traditional approach and says, we'll do this and we'll train everybody and they'll all march in unison. And they're like, yes, that's what we want. That's what we wanted. And it's like, you're back to doing the same old thing again.
Just a little bit different rock, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I think writing a book for that, I know you were threatening that. I don't know if you're really going to do it, but writing a book for that, one of the challenges will be the organizational cultures. You know, there's a whole bunch of books about organizational cultures and mm-hmm. types. You'll have to figure out if you're going to like write to a specific culture or if you're going to cover a bunch of different ones and... I don't know, man.
Oh, no, I've learned my lesson. I'm not writing any more books until I figure out if somebody wants it first.
Yeah. Oh, then you're talking about Lean Startup, Tom. I have a...
Exactly.
I didn't send a consultant over.
Totally different. Yeah.
Yeah, writing the book is not the cheap way. Though you at least wrote a very small book, but it still takes time. So
it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agile Thoughts wants your help. However you find our show, be it through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of the other podcast aggregation systems, go ahead and leave us a review. Click some stars, and that will help us grow the show. Thank you. We've got show notes for you, and they include links to yummy things that we talked about in this episode. What are show notes? The show notes show up right in your podcast player if that's what you use to listen to the show. You just look into that part of your app, and you can click and tap away to your heart's content. But if you're not using a podcast player, don't worry, we're not leaving you out. Just go back to the website where you downloaded the MP3, and there you will see the show notes. The series started episode 289. If you missed that episode, like my friend Forrest, you are in luck because you can find any episode that we have streamed You just go to agilethoughts.info, and there you will find a search box where you can find missing episodes. Next episode, more Tom Perry.
I did want to ask you, another author, have you ever written books just because you kind of had to, not because you felt there was a compelling need, but the words just had to come out?